For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
So, in contemplating what I was going to talk about, I came across a little passage from the Shobogenzo, Ehe Dogen's Shobogenzo. There's a fascicle in the text called Gyoji, and it's a longer fascicle that's somewhat hagiographic in its nature. So, meaning that much like the transmission of the lamp, which some of you may be familiar with, he re-examines the lives of a number, I think 35 ancestors in the lineage. And his focus is the meaning of practice related to time, according to this scholar, time, metaphysics, and ethics. Kazu Tanahashi-san translates Gyoji as continuous practice, which I sort of misremembered to Tygon for my topic as constant practice. But I think that translation still sort of works. And it's been translated in a number of ways. One scholar actually has... one calls it perpetual effort. Another one actually has this longer translation that says participation in primordial accessus of being itself which brought forth matter and mind. I've never even heard the word accessus. Microsoft Word has never heard of the word accessus. Or accessus, perhaps. But I kind of like that. Participation in primordial accessus of being itself. This activity being that which brought forth matter and mind. So anyway, let me read this kind of core passage that has been... It's plucked out in a number of places, being somewhat a nugget unto itself and not so much hagiographic or dealing with these kind of ancestor stories. So I'll just read it to you. This, again, is Kaz's translation. On the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable continuous practice. It forms the way ring and is never cut off. Throughout aspiration for enlightenment, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there is no gap. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is unstrained, not forced by you or others. That means your practice affects the entire earth and sky in 10 directions. Although it is not noticed by others or by yourself, it is so. In this way, by the continuous practice of all Buddhas and ancestors, your practice is actualized and your great road opens up. By your continuous practice, the continuous practice of all Buddhas is actualized, and the great road of all Buddhas opens up. Your continuous practice creates the circle of the way. So, there's a lot. I mean, you know, we could have a week of discourses, I'm sure, you know, unpacking just this one passage. But it's doing something very interesting, I think, that Dogen does in a lot of, in all of his teaching, and the way he's constantly turning things around and kind of pulling them inside out and turning them upside down. Turning upside down our very ideas, these conventional understandings we have about so many things. In this case, centrally thinking about our practice and this idea of constant practice. So I know some of you are engaged in a practice commitment period where there's maybe a little ramping up of your practice, a little bit more of a sense of exerting a little bit more will, perhaps, towards an aspiration for a more seamless kind of practice, in a more conscious way. And sometimes that can be an idea that that really kind of gets under our skin. And there's a lot of teaching stories in our Zen tradition that foster this attitude or really encourage it. You know, lines like, "Do not waste your days and nights in vain. Practice like your hair is on fire." You know, the stories of monks meditating all night long and gouging their legs with awls so that they stay awake. Bodhidharma himself cutting off his eyelids. Right, this kind of very intense warrior, almost warrior style practice. And in the midst of this dissertation, this fascicle, where he sort of, in some ways, presents that model of practice, holding forth all of these ancestors who devoted their lives utterly and completely to Dharma and the practice of Zazen and saving all beings. And yet, in the midst of that, he introduces some what I think are pretty interesting twists on that. So he starts out by saying, on the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable continuous practice. So already at the beginning, he's just saying, it's always there, this practice. It forms the way ring and it's never cut off. So this way ring idea, this is a little bit of an interesting translation by Cause. Other translators don't translate it that way. They point out that in this next line, it says, throughout aspiration for enlightenment, these being the stages of our practice that are conventionally understood, the sort of, this is true throughout all schools of Buddhist practice. There's aspiration for enlightenment, there's practice, there's enlightenment, and there's nirvana. So I think in a way, Dogen's calling this a way ring, a way, do, Tao, ring. So instead of saying that we, in this linear way that we might normally think of this, aspiration for enlightenment, we kindle this aspiration, we show up, we do some Zazen for a while, we get the big Satori, then we're enlightened, and then we enter nirvana, right, when we die. Maybe that's a conventional, linear understanding. It's very, you know, these kinds of understandings are very pernicious. They're very deeply ingrained, especially, well, I think in all civilizations, but maybe in our kind of positivist Western one, this idea of linearity and acquisition is really deeply ingrained. But I think Dogen's pointing us here to it being this circle, that there's no gap between enlightenment, practice, or the aspiration for enlightenment, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana. It's a way ring. It actually circles. And there's no gap. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. That's the next line. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is unstrained, not forced by you or others. So because there is this way ring of practice, it's unstrained, not forced by you or others. I think this is a really important point, and it's something I really appreciate about Taigen's emphasis in our teaching or in our practice, that, you know, he often encourages us to, number one, be gentle with ourselves. He's never here at the front of the room shouting. He's not walking around hitting us with sticks. You know, there's that tradition in our lineage as well. But he encourages us to be gentle with ourselves and to enjoy our practice. And Dogen, I think he's being very true to Dogen's spirit in this way and our earlier Soto ancestors. So this being so, continuous practice is unstrained, not forced by you or others. I think it's very important that we try to tune into that that quality of unforcedness and not straining, because when we do force it and when we do strain it, not only is there something extra being added, which our teaching sort of directs us to not do, but the quality of practice itself suffers, and we suffer. This practice really fundamentally is about a deep sort of happiness and joy in the midst of our confused and our confused lives, oftentimes, that where suffering is unavoidable, inescapable at some level. And yet we come to this practice to be reminded that the great road of Buddha ancestors is even there. And there's a great joy in that realization, I think. So sometimes maybe we need to kindle a little more heat in our practice. Maybe we need to exert a little bit more energy. But I think that it needs to be a sustainable attitude, a sustainable posture. And that word posture is such a wonderful one, because it comes right back to our Zazen. So I was asked to teach do the Zazen introduction for a couple people who came yesterday morning. And I often point out that it's, you know, when we sit upright, it's not military style, you know. This isn't the Marines. But it's not, you know, we're not slumped over either. So finding that right point just in our posture that's unstrained, not forced by you and not forced by others. I think it's something to experience in our sitting. So he goes on to say that means your practice affects the entire earth and sky in 10 directions. Which is a pretty extraordinary claim. And maybe sometimes we actually can feel like that. Maybe we really feel like very expansive in our Zazen, and we are really connected in a deep and fundamental way to the whole universe and to all beings. We're practicing with all beings. Sometimes we do. We taste that. We experience that. But he goes on to say, although it is not noticed by others or by yourself, it is so. Most of the time, maybe we don't notice that. Maybe we think we're here for, I don't know, remedial human training, which is also sort of true. But going back to that wavering idea, the aspiration for enlightenment, practice and enlightenment, and nirvana, all of it, practice and enlightenment being one, this being the central thrust of Dogen's teaching, we don't need to know. We don't need to see it. Sometimes we get a taste, and that's nice, but I think that we even understand that, even in the midst of our confusion, we know that our minds and even our feelings, our emotional state, is too erratic. It's not an effective gauge. We know it. We know that that's not an effective gauge of our practice. We just know that. In some fundamental way, that's what brings us to sit in the first place. So I just really appreciate that Dogen's reminding us here that, number one, there's a great road of Buddha ancestors. That's a great thing to be reminded of. And that there is always unsurpassable continuous practice, whether or not I know it or not. So in this way, by the continuous practice of all Buddhas and ancestors, your practice is actualized. Your practice is actualized. And your great road opens up. It's very touching to think. So this great road of Buddha ancestors exists. And by this continuous practice of all Buddhas and ancestors, our own practice is realized. Whether we know it or not, we come, we sit. And it's not through some act of will or psychological genius that our practice is actualized, or that we, this another translation or something that he's playing off is this idea of us getting enlightenment as some sort of permanent state, which is again a more conventional understanding from earlier periods in Buddhist history perhaps. But by the continuous practice of all Buddhas and ancestors, your practice is actualized and your great road opens up. So there's this, I like this sort of allusion in a way to grace. That there's this grace that is imbued to us or implied towards us. The last time I was asked to give a talk, I talked about faith in Zazen, and it's a very important aspect of practice to me, this idea of faith. But I don't find as satisfying an analog of faith in any other tradition, which is perhaps why I practice Zen, in particular Dogen Zen, is very appealing to me. So I was raised in a Christian tradition, and so I'm familiar from the kind of the inside of that tradition how faith is often portrayed and sometimes experienced, and maybe many of you too, from the Judeo Christian or monotheistic religions, this idea of faith, very complex idea, and has it certainly its analogs to this. But then there's an interesting analog too in another Japanese tradition, the of Shinran, Shin Buddhism, where there's belief in Amida Buddha. Shinran, very interesting figure. He practiced in a number of Buddhist traditions, and this idea, and he lived about the same time as Dogen, I think a little bit earlier, but he had this sort of realization too that there was, he couldn't do it with his own human understanding, his own human failings and limitations. There was no way that he could achieve Buddhahood. And he just completely gave himself over to faith in Amida Buddha. And in a way, this sort of understanding is folded in, I think, to Dogen's understanding here. So in this way, by the continuous practice of all Buddhas and ancestors, your practice is actualized and your great road opens up. So again, another Christian phrase, good news, as we enter Easter, as we're in the midst of Lent. The good news is that your practice is actualized, and you, not only does your great road open up, but you are on a great road, he's reminding us here. And that great road is opened up, it's actualized, it's manifest through this very noble practice that I like that, you know, something that appeals so much to me about it is that it's physical as well as being spiritual and psychological, perhaps, and, you know, all of these nuanced things. It's a complete package. So by your continuous practice, he says, the continuous practice of all Buddhas is actualized and the great road of all Buddhas opens up. So, and then he goes on, he finishes to say, your continuous practice creates the circle of the way. So that's our, that's the call to us. So rather than just relying on the grace of something external that we might call Buddha, we might call God, we might call Jesus, we might call Amida, whatever we might call that thing that sometimes we feel the grace of. But when we feel that grace, I think we're also called to respond. And I think Dogen is indicating ways for us to respond. And I think a really beautiful response is zazen, more practice. So that we receive this sense of continuous practice of Buddhas and ancestors actualizing our life and opening our road up. We really can experience this. But at the same time, we also, I think, know that we need to practice in order to actualize the road of all the Buddhas in the past, in the future, and certainly in the present, with our Sangha, all these Buddhas amongst us, and in the world, these people who maybe don't realize they're Buddhas or Buddhists. So that our practice allows people down the street at the Rinzai Temple to actualize their Buddha road, and people down the street at Cynical Catholic Retreat Center, they can actualize their practice and Buddha road, allow it to open up, etc. In all kinds of manners. Our practicing allows all things to be actualized. So our continuous practice creates the circle of the way. So I think even in this passage, it's creating a way ring, which is something that Dogen does really beautifully, I think, in many of his teachings and writings. There's this... Well, Shohaku was here the other week, and he talked about... He was talking about Genjo Koan and how he broke it up into sort of 13 sections and was going through each of these sections and how each one sort of built on the next one. And yet, the entirety of Genjo Koan is that same way ring kind of activity in many sort of smaller rings, too. It keeps circling. A teacher I used to study with said, Dogen, it's like he kneads your mind. It's like he stretches it out and he sort of mushes it around in a gentle way, which is infinitely surprising to me. Yeah, that's basically, I think, all I have to say. So maybe I'll just open it up and we can just talk about it together a little bit. Would anybody like me to read it one more time?
Yeah.
Yeah? I'll read a second translation from Hee Jin Kim in a book that Taigen actually did the introduction to. This is his translation. He says, the great way of Buddha and ancestors always consists of these supreme activities: the desire for enlightenment, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana. These four activities are never interrupted in their continuation and never allow even a single interval between them. This is the perpetuation of the way through activity. Consequently, supreme activity is neither a contrivance of the self nor that of others. It is actively undefiled. The power of such an activity sustains myself and others. Its import is such that all the heavens and the earth in the 10 directions enjoy the merit of my activity, even if neither the self nor others are aware of it, such is the case. I think Kaz's translation is much better. I think it has the feeling a little bit better, but the idea is still there. Any questions or comments? Yeah, Jeremy.
So how does backsliding figure into this circle way? This circle practice then?
Well, who is it that's seeing backsliding?
Well, I mean, I always conjure up this idea of backsliding being kind of like this doubt that can manifest itself and lead to kind of this casting aside of practices, not being as relevant now or at that time as it was previous and seen by the person.
Yeah, well, I would still just sort of maintain that question, like, the one who perceives backsliding is maybe not Buddha. Maybe, you know, I don't know if Buddha perceives backsliding. But certainly, I know what you're saying, you know, in our human life, sometimes, you know, we... But I think part of what Dogen is saying is not to set up that kind of distinction. In a way, it's self-defeating. Sometimes your practice has to be loose, you know. And I think the longer we practice, the more we witness that our practice has different qualities, you know, at different times. And that's okay. Yeah. So sometimes we go live in the monastery, and sometimes we never live in the monastery. Sometimes we have practice period, and we practice more with more diligence. And sometimes we have babies and can't practice in that way we used to think we should practice, and so we start to realize we have to practice in a different way. You know. So how do we access continuous practice, unstrained, not forced? How do we access that? It's a question, it's a koan, and it's always different. But I think we gotta give ourselves a break. So yeah. That kind of self-defeating, those kind of tapes that we play ourselves, that's part of practice too, is learning how to access this kind of grace. And that's why I wanted to read this, because I personally found sustenance in these passages, you know, that there's a great way of Buddha ancestors. That's really fantastic to hear, you know, and that they're on a great road, and it opens up, and that I'm capable of experiencing that, even when I don't know it. That's, you know, we can touch that when we come and we sit together. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we often feel like that, I think. Backsliding. Anybody else have a comment? Yeah.
I was wondering, you're talking about the continuous circle of practice and of life, and kind of how we can be a part of that through meditation. And I was wondering what they were getting at with the 10 different directions.
That's a phrase that is used a lot in the Buddhist texts. So when, you know, in the Indian sutras, they're pretty psychedelic and cosmic, and they'll talk about billions and billions, you know, more grains of... There are more Buddhas in one world system than there are grains of sand along the Ganges. You know, infinite kalpas of time, with the kalpa being the time it takes for a dove to fly over a mountain and brush, you know, basically wear it down with its brush of its wing, flying by once a year. So, you know, I mean, these mind-blowing spans of time and numbers of beings and planets and world systems. But then the tradition went to China. And China, I don't know, the Chinese were very practical people. And they didn't, for them, and this is true in their kind of literary tradition, and therefore true in some of the Buddhist and the Zen texts, 10,000 was as big as they got. So for them, 10,000 or even 10 directions was plenty. So the 10 directions is often spoken of. I can't remember exactly what the 10 directions are. Hogetsu, do you remember what the exact
number 10
directions?
Yes, it's a way of... So it's
up, down,
north, south, east, west.
Yeah.
And then the four corners.
Yeah.
That. So north, south, east, west.
Yeah. So it's a four-dimensional kind of...
And then there's like back and forth, something like that.
Up and down.
Yeah, up and down. Well, yeah. But there's some other dimensionality to it. But I think it's a standard kind of way of speaking about... so it's not really like hyperbolic in that sense. It's just sort of like us saying the four directions.
Everywhere at once,
yeah.
Too. Is another way to say it. I mixed up my 10 directions and my 10,000 things, but yeah, nonetheless, that it's just meaning sort of everywhere. So it's not a big hyperbolic phrase.
Yeah, if you translate it everywhere, that would be a good translation.
Another question, comment?
Thinking of this backsliding thing.
Hmm.
Had the image of, like, remember Hot Wheels with cars, you know? Mm-hmm. And like you build these tracks and they have these like circular things in them. And you're always on the track, but you're sort of like in different locations. And I was thinking, like you like a little hollow car, like, whoop.
But you're still on the track, and it, you know, whether going backwards or forwards, you're still on the track, right?
Sometimes you just feel like you're upside down.
Yep.
Yeah. There's another phrase, you can't fall off Buddha's palm. I remember that really struck me. I was in a sesshin once, and I had this real sensation, like, oh yeah, you know, I really got that. It was one of those kind of moments of grace, you know. You're like, oh my... It's actually, I think in the Dharma Bums, there's a scene where Jack Kerouac, he's like leaping down the mountain and he just starts... He's just giddy from... I've had this exact experience going down a mountain. You've climbed a mountain and you're going down, you've got your heavy pack or whatever. And I don't know, the altitude and the exhaustion or whatever, you get a bit giddy. But he had this sense of... He couldn't fall off the mountain. I think it was that same idea. The same idea, you couldn't fall off Buddha's palm. It's like you can't fall off the mountain. You can't fall off the earth. You can fall down and get banged up pretty good. But you know, that's a real sense for me that I have appreciated in my encounter with Zen. It's helped me to learn how to trust life. Because it's sort of like the ground. Sometimes you can have the sensation in your zazen of the ground coming up to meet you. and support you. And that has analogs all through our lives, you know, in so many ways. I mean, we're just sustained by the world, you know, in infinite ways that we can't grasp. So whether we see it or not, that's happening. And I think Dogen is saying that with our practice too, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a really wonderful point, because, you know, you spoke quite a bit about grace. In some ways, you know, the sensation of you know, backsliding or one can enter periods of one's practice where it really can feel a little bit lost in it. It's kind of the other pole of that. And, you know, one of the really interesting things about this passage, and, you know, Dogen in general, is the part, you know, whether you know it or not, it's and what you said, it's like not, you know, you don't always have to see things. Usually you can't see things. And there's this idea that even if one has lost touch sometimes with that kind of grace, you know, if one continues to sit, you know, continues to engage the best one can through that, the practice will still be unfolding in a complete way, mm-hmm. even though one can experience absence, can experience a sense of distance and bewilderment.
Yeah, something about what you were saying was just making me think about this idea of sustainability again. And and I think if we come to Zen practice, or if we keep coming to it with this idea that it ought to give us something or provide us something, fix something, that I think we're bound to be disappointed. You know, as Kodo Suwaki says, you know, our zazen is precisely good for nothing. And that's what makes it beautiful. You know, I'm an artist and I feel the same way about art. And I distrust art that feels too functional, or that it's got too much of an agenda, or that it's trying to do something. Because what I really think I love about art is that it's so useless. You know, this has analogs all through life as well. But I think that's something that we're very practical people as well. I think that's why Zen is appealing in our culture somewhat, because we're generally a practical people, I think, much like the Chinese were practical people. And so there is usefulness in the practice. I mean, there are things, positive things that occur, but I think if we overemphasize that part, we run the risk of getting really disillusioned and not being able to experience that sustaining and sustainable kind of grace of this practice, you know. I've experienced that. But that's something I really like about Dogen's teaching. And in this passage, he covers that. He starts out saying there's this Buddha way, this Buddha road, and you're being sustained in this continuous practice, whether you know it or not, and yet practice so that you can sustain, you know, so that we have a function, because we want to have a function too. That's part of our impulse as bodhisattvas, Buddhas to be. We want to help. So how can we help? Well, it gets easier. We develop this response ability, as Taigen likes to say. We develop it, we perceive more clearly through our practice. That's maybe something tangible that can happen for us. But most of the time, we're not aware of it. You know, I think the longer we practice, the less we're aware of it. So at the beginning of practice, maybe it's more visible. There's some more positive changes. And if you get too caught up in those, because you're going to backslide. it's just going to happen, you know. There's going to be excitement, you're going to practice, then you're going to backslide, and then you have to find a more sustainable kind of fuel and impulse, I think, to practice. Which, again, is, I think, what Doug Dogen's pointing out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Any other comments? All right. Thank you very much.